The following is a presentation of Foosball Radio.
If it's too loud, you're too old.
We cannot believe it. We just went, oh!
I was a good bar player.
Okay.
I was very vocal.
Very vocal.
I wanted to win.
This is Todd Lafredo. You're listening to Foosball Radio.
It's Foos Talk Live.
Are you talking to me?
Compelling and lively banter.
Are you going to talk to us?
Talking foosball.
Foosball was how I measured my value as a man. You took that away.
Players and fans, promoters and pros. Unedited and raw.
Talk, talk, talk.
Living in the moment.
We have a lot of important things to talk about.
All while practicing social distancing.
Cool. We'll talk. No big whoop.
Let's get this thing started. Foos Talk Live. Coming to you live from the Foosball Radio Studios, it's another episode of Foos Talk Live. Hey there, I'm Tom Robinson, and I want to personally thank our Patreon pillars for their support of Foosball Radio and Foos Talk Live. Here's to James Sparky Castillo, David Kalla, Jay Teal, Brian Schmid, Cameron Burrows, Mike Green, Jimmy Love, Dwayne Stewart, Judy Schober, Jamie Kunst, Rob Cutler, Reed Rector, Clay Toomey, Adam Gilson, and our friends from the 716 Buffalo Foosball Club. Thank you. Your support brings continued and expanding content from Foosball Radio and Foos Talk Live as we cover the greatest sport on earth. Visit patreon.com/foosballradio to find out how you can become a Foosball Radio patron. Learn about the exclusive benefits we offer you. Foos Talk Live is brought to you by Original Leonhardt. The Leonhardt Tournament Model is the most popular foosball table at the ITSF World Cup. Designed and handcrafted in Germany, order online and have it delivered to your door. Visit www.original-leonhardt-usa.com and use promo code FOOSTALK to save 10% off your purchase price. Diving right in headfirst into episode number 144. Hey there, it's Tom Robinson, and we are ready to go, even though, it was a challenge to get here, because last week, well, we put it all on the table when it came to the final five of the top 25 male singles players in the U.S. Tour. We survived it, but here we are. And of course, speaking of the game of foosball, it's always best to have the greatest foosball play-by-play announcer to talk to. That would be Jim Stevens. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, you know, you say we survived it, Tom. I'm not sure that has happened yet. I think we've got an hour or two here that we still need to survive based on some of the comments and some of the feedback we've gotten during this past week, which is really what this kind of thing is all about, is developing and instigating conversation and hearing opinions, and hopefully opinions ground in actual science. by the way, if you're watching or listening to the show tonight, instead of watching the AFC championship game, it is 20-13. Kansas City leading Cincinnati with 2:53 left in the third period.
Well, we can depend on you for that. Well, thank you, Jim. Appreciate that.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see if we survive tonight, Tom.
Well, certainly this would not quite be the same if it were it not for our Zen master Foos Talker of Ventura, California, would be Adam Gilson. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Jim. Mark somewhere eventually. Tom, of course. I just happy to be here, happy to be surviving. I like the whole Zen thing. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I think that's neat. And I don't know. I'm excited for this. I'm excited for this conversation that we're having tonight, because I think that in the grand scheme of things, we can maybe help people out there that have opinions. And I'm feeling snarky, but
if
you're having an opinion, it's always good to have a reason for that opinion.
Wow, snarky.
That isn't based in, you know, an emotional response, which I get. I mean, we all love foosball. We're all here for
emotional
foosball,
when it comes. Come on. It's never emotional.
Yeah, I know. And I say that just because I personally get a little bit emotional when we talk about us having opinions, Jim, Mark, Dave Gummison, of course, who's not here with us tonight. So as the evening unfolds, and as we really start talking about the rationale and start addressing some of the questions and comments that people had, I want the narrative to unfold that, you know, Jim, I don't think you're sitting there with a bunch of random darts or a bunch of post-it notes with people's names on it, and you're throwing it against the wall hoping something sticks. I don't think. Well, maybe Mark is. I don't know. But oh. Jim, I know you're not, and Dave, I know you're not. Or, but I know he doesn't, right? So as the evening progresses, I think that's what we're going to unveil. That's not actually what's happening here.
Yeah. I'm comforted by the thought here, Adam. But you know, we probably should mention that from somewhere in flyover country, it's the Zen Food Faster Master of California.
Well, listen, guys, I absolutely go with my gut on everything because it creates the most fun and is the most antagonistic. So I can assure you that some of these choices were like, that guy probably shouldn't go there, but what the hell? I'm going to put him there anyway. And it's worked like a charm because now we got people pissed off. And that was that's my whole shtick, right? Pissing people off. But, you know, so I think that it's a case study every time we do this and how emotional people can get connected to certain choices. And I think I love the idea that there's some randomness to the decision making. I don't think mm-hmm. randomness is a strong word. And so I'll play devil's advocate here, but listen, if some people think that this is who could beat who, and if this was about who could beat who, it's easy. It's Fred, right? And if it's about who could beat who on their best day during a certain era, then in the 90s, it's Terry. It's not that. It's not. This is why people get so mixed up and confused and follow right. their own little truths and meander on these little pathways. Everyone has their own little journey with this, and the whole thing entertains the hell out of me. So, you know, Adam, to your point, I'm not trying to undermine your point. It's formulaic, and still we didn't agree, and people aren't going to agree with us.
No,
but the good thing is we get a lot of feedback online, and we get to speak to that. Go ahead, Jim.
No, and you're right about all of that. Both of you guys are. But, you know, there is some emotion involved, of course, how we feel about a certain player, how they impacted us when we first saw them live, perhaps. But, you know, there's a lot of things that go into this puzzle, into this, you know, this theorem that we come up with. I mean, there's the eye test, obviously. And for a lot of people, that's all they look at. They look, this is the best player I ever saw. I'm putting him up higher on the list. But I think we also see on this particular list, world championships mean a lot. There's only one player, interestingly enough, there's only one world champion who was not on the list. That was Brandon Munoz. And the only reason he's not on the list, the body of work isn't there. Yet still, we take the number of world championships. If you look at our top five, look at the top 10, it really almost, you can almost count it down, the number of world championships that these players had and then where they are on the list. Length of career certainly is part of it. You know, oftentimes we're going to look at someone who had a long career, a long successful career, multi-tables, multi-eras, and we're going to give some strength to that. Also, the strength of field. You know, there was a comment somewhere this week talking about Ryan Moore and Billy Pappas being flipped, okay, right? And there's something to be said for that. Now, again, Billy Pappas won 4 world championships. Ryan Moore on the American Tour has won 3. Mm-hmm. But you also look at when Billy won those world championships, right? You look who was out there. Right. Fred was there. Tony's on top of his game. Ryan's coming along, just breaking through, an amazing player. Rob Mara is out there. All these other great players during that 2005-2011 window that you got to give a lot of respect to what Billy did during that time period. How many majors have they won? How many overall championships have they won? How many state and regionals? All these things matter. And the other thing I think that matters with some of our pioneers who maybe didn't have a long career was how did they impact the sport? How did they impact, in this case, the singles format? You know, how much did other players, how much did they derive from what these pioneers of foosball brought? And so all of these things kind of go into the mixer, right? Each of us has different strengths. Each part of the puzzle is a little bigger here for us, or for me, a little different for Adam, for Mark, for Dave. And then we kind of come out the other end of it with our opinion. Mm-hmm. But it's an opinion, Adam, and I know you were touching on this and you were feeling snarky about this, and I love that about you. But let's make sure when we have a reaction, when we react to something, when we have an opinion, let's base it on something. You know, let's just not base it on, this is what I feel. You know, that's certainly part of it, but not all of it.
Here's a quick philosophical question, in a way. Let's say you took the top 5 players that made our list, and you look at how often each of them beat each other. So, like, how did Tony do against, let's say, Billy? And how did Billy do against, if you were playing Ryan? And how many times they won against each other or lost against each other? Would that change anything?
A little bit. I think maybe it would. But I think when you look at that, and again, you know, we've talked about Fred and his abilities on other tables and how he really never loses. There is nobody that challenges him.
Right.
Here on the American tour, there were three guys that really challenged him during the course of his career, mm-hmm. in Spreideman, in Pappas, and in Moore. And all three of them have very good records against Fred.
Yeah.
Compared to everyone else in the world, right?
Right.
And so these things do matter. And I guarantee you, none of those players was undefeated against any of those other players. They mm-hmm. all had wins against each other. And it probably, if we were to look at that and break it down, it'd be pretty close across the board.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. And
I want to interject. That's a great point. But I want to interject one more thing because it's completely relevant here. I've had some conversations. So prior to this, I think after the top 50, absolutely before the top 25, I've had conversations with David Kalla about his points list. And I've had these same conversations about the points list. And this is why it's relevant. If your brain is just a calculus, and if it's just analytics that govern your decision-making, if your brain filters information, it's only data-driven, then there's a barrier. So I'm trying to convince David Kalla that masters should be champions. Master is this arbitrary title that's created that people buy into because they buy into institutions and it's the way their brains operate. So I'm trying to convince David Kalla. David, people are not masters unless they're champions. But I'm just going to be direct. And I'm trying to move David to the space where it's not just analytics, because even on his points list, you could be a master without winning anything. Mm. And why is that relevant is because if we were just to use a calculus, analytics, some of these guys would be way higher on this list that won championships but didn't play regularly or didn't beat the guys in the earlier rounds. The list would be different if it was just analytics. The fundamental part that changes the variance in these guys is their champions. How often they were champions, how often they won, if they could close the deal. It's a massive variable, and it's not always a formula. And the two things are related in my brain. It's not linear. It's some kind of abstract pathway that gets there. But the bottom line is the guys that we have higher on the list are championship closers, and that matters. And I'll bring one last point up. Someone brought up to me, how is Dan Kaiser above Doug Furry on your list? And we got to figure that one out. That's kind of an interesting point, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I think we looked at Dan Kaiser's championships, how many he won. How many world championships he won in the 70s? But it's kind of an interesting segue into this conversation. Anyway, I don't want to get into the commentary you're going to get into, Tom, because I think you have the list. Go ahead.
Let's draw a parallel, though, because you're saying, what are you saying there about Dan Kaiser? That he won an unprecedented amount of open singles at Worlds during the golden age of foosball.
Mm-hmm. And the super singles.
And Furry should be higher because...
I'm not saying Furry should be higher. I'm not saying you.
I'm saying the people that are telling you this, some people, like, why?
So every single major singles championship that Furry had the opportunity to win, he won. And it's all the biggest dollar amounts ever available, as I understand it. Correct me at any time. But
except for when Kaiser was there.
I could be wrong, just said that Kaiser couldn't either never did or couldn't beat Furry. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know the record, but this 70s master said that Kaiser couldn't beat Furry.
I'm gonna talk a little bit more about that later, because I've got some numbers to back up a couple of things, but let's get the show started and let's get down to specifics after that. Because there are some interesting numbers, and Adam, I know you have one more point. Go for it.
Yeah, let me just. I want to tie this direct line between Dan Kaiser and what he did do in the time that he did do it to Colin Yon, and what he did do in the time that he did do it. And I think that's an interesting point, and something that I want to talk about later is that you could argue that we were biased towards Fred because of he won a lot at the majors, but he didn't do anything regionally,
mm-hmm.
ever.
Right.
But we still put him up pretty high, higher than somebody like, you know, Ryan Moore, these other players that won a lot regionally. What's our metric? What does it matter? How does Kaiser fit into that? I'm excited for it.
Yeah, really cool. And I think there's a great deal of discussion that could go on way beyond this. I just wanted to make mention that JB Lanch 71 is on our Twitch TV feed tonight. And he says, by the way, I'm listening to you guys while I play with my 11-year-old son, who is currently addicted to foosball. He's working on his snake shot already. We are 2 weeks in. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
Show him a pull kick and a push kick. Make him a Renaissance man.
Right.
Because there's a lot of up and coming players out there that don't know how to block a pull kick.
And JB, you might want to mute this next feature if that's okay by you.
What Jim and I like to do right about this time is to reveal our favorite IPA.
Well, Jim, I mean, it's been a long week. I mean, what have you in your sweaty palm this evening?
You know, I was lucky enough. There's a handful of beers, of IPAs in the country that are literally legendary. Out of the Russian River Brewery, Pliny the Elder is big. The Stone, one of the early mass-produced IPAs, legendary.
Yes.
But then there's another one. There's a brewery up in Vermont. And again, I'm kind of up in New England again.
Nice.
And spending a lot of time up there. It's in Vermont. It is called The Alchemist. And this brewery is legendary. And this beer in particular, I walked into my establishment yesterday. They had four single cans sitting on a shelf. I bought all of them because it is the heady topper. This is one of the most famous IPAs in all the world, one of the most legendary. It sells out quickly.
It is
not nationally distributed. I don't know why it's here in Durango. My uncle is out in California right now looking all over LA for it. Can't find it. It is an absolutely phenomenal double IPA at 8%. Had it before, having it tonight, because it is good.
Wow, legendary. Legend, that goes with the theme tonight, legendary.
It says right on the top, drink from the can.
Oh, that's why you're doing that.
I follow orders.
Okay.
I follow orders.
Done. Well, Adam, what have you?
Well, I have become super patriotic in times past here because I watched the Top Gun Maverick trailer 20 times in a row last night, and I found me this Voodoo Ranger Juice Force IPA that has a gentleman there dressed up as a pilot.
Wow.
And, you know, I keep going back to Voodoo Ranger, and I love that.
That's great.
Let me see how.
Good stuff.
Let me see how much more patriotic I get from this sip.
Might take a few more.
That's very grapefruity. I'm shocked by how grapefruity that is.
Grapefruity.
But that's okay.
Okay.
Florida's part of the United States, and
yeah,
that is what it is, right? So let's.
That actually, and of course, that comes out of Fort Collins, Colorado, out of the New Belgium Brewery.
Yeah.
Maybe the best and the biggest mass-produced IPAs and craft beers in the country.
There you
can get them anywhere and everywhere. Yeah, they're very good.
Yeah, they are great, for sure. Well, so I've done it again, something that is really off the beaten trail here. But tonight, I have found my favorite location called the Old Saratoga Mercantile. Something called Double Sinner. Double Sinner.
Oh, my goodness. Tom.
Double Sinner. Now, this one is it's different because it's made with marshmallow. Yeah, it's a double IPA, 8% by alcohol by volume, by the Branch Blade Brewing Company of North Haven, Connecticut. It is the mecca of IPAs on the East Coast, North Haven, Connecticut, by the way. And this one is a surprising combination of marshmallow with a smooth drinking experience that will also satisfy the hot.
Goodness, head. Good luck, Tom.
Haven't had it before, but I was curious, especially because of the can. But let's give it a pop, and well, of course, I've got to use a glass. I got to see what it looks like here. Oh, it has a marshmallowy look to it.
You know, when I was 4 years old, I ate a full bag of mini marshmallows, and I have not had a marshmallow since.
Uh-oh.
It's sort of a famous story in my family. I do not eat marshmallows.
Let me
and
guess,
even watching and thinking marshmallows in beer,
Let me guess, you gave that bag back at one point in so many ways.
I gave every bit of it back. Yes, I did.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? That'll cure you for life. But, you know, this is really a pretty good combination. I mean, just the bouquet. Oh, yeah, there's marshmallow.
Of what? What bouquet? It's got to smell like the inside of a clown's mouth.
Oh,
Tom, blink twice if you're okay, dude. Are you? Is there somebody in the room with you, forcing you to
only
drink that?
Listen, if anyone knows what the inside of a clown's mouth smells like, it's probably you, Adam.
It'd be Adam. Yes.
So, tell us.
Pray tell, discuss further, please. The inside of a clown's mouth. Mm.
Wow. I'm going to let Mark gets one of those a year, and I guess he's going to use it early this year, but that's fine.
Of course, because Mark is behind the wheel, we probably don't want to know what he's drinking tonight.
But I'm hoping he's having some Starbucks. Are you having Starbucks?
Well, the worst thing about it, too, dude, worst thing is I got a Starbucks, and I need to use the bathroom really badly, and your damn thing is making it worse. The whole drainage thing that happened.
Drainage.
I'm glad you turned it off.
Mm-hmm. Well, feel free to take us into the restroom with us. You know, that would be fine. You
can take don't. That like that episode of The Naked Gun, or that movie, The Naked. Anyways, Tom.
Yes. Let's get this back.
Gain control of this. I'm so confused.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to the bathroom with Mark.
Well, since we've been on the topic of singles for the last, 5 weeks or so, we may as well continue on that theme, especially for tonight's edition of The Flashback.
With great moments in foosball history, this is a Foos Talk Live Flashback.
Mains championship point for Tony. Spread him. Another chance to win it right here. For the win, Tony Spreader.
Stokes it home, and there it is! Tony Spreaderman is the 2017 Tornado World Singles Champion. For the third year in a row, it's Tony. Spreaderman somewhere in that crowd of people. Here come the balloons.
That's one of the most high-quality foosball games I've seen in a long time.
That was extraordinary.
Tony's a deserved champion there. He clawed his way back, and he was well-deserved. Congratulations, Tony.
Listen in next time for another great moment in foosball history. It's Foos Talk Live.
Just reinforcing our number one player of the top 25 singles players on the U.S. Tour. There you go. Reinforcement.
And that was number three of five in a row that he would eventually win, which is unprecedented. Never been done before. I know Frederic Collignon in Europe has won five world championships on nearly every European table, but never here in America. And Tony, the only guy to do it. Certainly one of the reasons we put him at number one.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how Ryan came back. And of course, in what was it? 2020? Or was it 2021?
No, it was 2021.
2021. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That Ryan, came back and beat Tony.
He did.
All tripled.
Yeah, the weekend he tripled. Yeah. And they can do that throughout the decade of the 2010s. They met probably in major championships 20, 30 times. And while Tony, I think, had the better of Ryan was still certainly in the mix. You know, maybe it was something like 20-10 or even closer than that, maybe 25-15. My math's not very good there. 22-13. There we go. And so, no, that's not right either. Never mind.
So when it comes to World Champion Singles Finals, how many times has Tony met Ryan again? Was it quite a few?
I'm going to say it is seven.
Seven times.
Off the top of my head, okay. The five he won and also lost a couple, eight. I would say eight. He's lost three. I think Ryan beat Tony in the finals of all three of his world championships. And Tony has beaten Ryan, I believe, four times in world championship finals. The other time he beat Todd Lafredo in the final back the year that Foosballers was shot, as we all remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was memorable.
So you think you think Tony's record against Ryan is 4-3 in world championship finals?
I think that feels right. I'd have to go over it and look it up, but I think that's pretty close. Yeah.
Well, when Tony won five in a row, Who was he playing against?
He played against Ryan. That's where the four that he won against Ryan.
1 second,
and then he won one of those against Todd Lafredo. Feel like I just said.
Well,
that's... And then, of course, in 2003, Tony beat Lewis Cartwright, and in 2008, he beat Fred. And interesting, here's one other thing. For those of you, real quick, and I know we got more to go here, one other thing. The last time that Tony and Fred played each other in this country, 2016, Intercontinental Cup, Tony beat him twice in that when they beat, when Team USA beat Team Europe, Team North America beat Team Europe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, there's
last time Fred was in this country.
Yeah. Once again, reinforcement for that decision to put Tony at the number one spot. How anybody could argue against that, I'm not sure, but well, anyway.
No, you know, I don't know. I mean, you certainly have a strong argument that Fred was number one as well. And you can almost say one and one A that close, really, you know. And I really think that it's only been the last couple of years, maybe when Tony sort of surged past it, maybe that fifth in a row really did it. And but it's tight. And if it came out the other way, I would have had no problem with that either.
Well,
I want to interject the point, you guys. This exact topic came up. So someone in the top 10 who wants to remain anonymous basically was describing why. Yeah. Basically describes why Billy should be over Ryan for this specific reason. And basically the conversation went was Ryan just had to beat Tony and he lost more than he won against Tony. And when Billy won, he had to beat a lot of other people to get there. So basically echoing the rationale that we had, but very sincere about it. Look, Ryan had to get past Tony and couldn't do it often. And when people stopped playing, he just had to beat Tony. And kind of a knock on, or kind of validating our order there.
Right. And you know, that's the thing that I find really interesting in a lot of the takes and opinions that I've seen, or opinions without rationale that I've seen, is people never talk about depth of field and the importance of it, right? Yeah. And it's something that is so, I don't know, like I would love, like it would be, I think, totally boring and just like a statistics class for us to write down our 10 columns of our rationales or whatever, right? Like nobody wants to do that. But still, though.
Here's an interesting thing. Think about this, Adam. We are familiar with the depth of field in varying degrees because we were there. If you were not there, for example, here's another one, Chase Pennell. He started in like, I don't know, 03 or 04. So he has no point of reference for depth of field the same way we don't for the 70s, but at least we romanticize it and appreciate it in a way that I think a lot of people don't necessarily appreciate or romanticize the way we do. It gives us substance in our ordering that kind of transcends our bias because we have our own bias. So I just wanted to point that out, that we have a point of reference for it. People that don't and don't have an appreciation for it are even more narrow about their opinions. They only know what they know, and it's Tony and Ryan are the best ever, right?
Yeah, I'm unbiased, though, and I'm not wrong about that.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So tonight, I was kind of thinking, I know we talked about it a little bit in the pre-show, but I think all three of us, and I know Dave would as well, have maybe some things about this list that maybe we think are should be a little different, or maybe players who should be on it and aren't, or shouldn't be on it and are. And so I'd love to kind of address one of mine here in a minute, but I'd love to hear what you guys think as well. You know what? And Tom, you know, you've become a student of the game as well.
Sure.
And so I'd love to hear yours opinions on this as well.
Well, I'd also like to chime in with a few of the comments that came up on the feed on Facebook. We can certainly toss those in there as well.
Right.
But Jim, why don't you launch into this and really kind of review what you feel.
All right. You know, we talked about a little bit about this as we were counting down the list. To me, you know, Todd Lafredo comes in at number 13 on this list. And then, you know, as I documented the things that Todd had done out on tour, and I'll kind of review those for you here a little bit. During the course of Todd Lafredo's career, he won just the two world titles, but he's one of the best singles players of the 90s. There's no question about it. When you're talking about the best players of the 90s, singles wise, Todd is right up there, three or four. You've obviously got Terry and you've got Tommy Atkinson. And then towards the end of it, you've got Fred early on, Horton was there. But really, spanning that complete decade, there were very few players who had as much success as Todd Lafredo during the course of that. I kind of want to go over my individual ballot when it came to this, when it came to Todd Lafredo. And you asked last week, Tom, who would, if I have Todd Lafredo as high as 7, which I did, that's mm-hmm. where I put him on my list. Mm-hmm. Who did I have behind him? I dropped Dan Kaiser to 8, and I have Tom Spear at 9, Tony Bacon at 10, Tommy Atkinson at 11, Steve Murray at 12. Hmm. All of those players finished ahead of Todd Lafredo.
Yeah.
I've got Todd ahead of those guys. And, of course, we're talking about 5 incredible singles players. But when you look at the length of the career, you look at the world championships, you look at the national championships, you look at the Masters singles championships, you look at all the majors that he won and the way he played the game. And during the course of the decade of the 2010s, 2010s to 2020s, no doubt who the top 2 players out on the American Tour were. Number 3 was Todd Lafredo during that entire decade. If you're going to break down and look at the results, look at the world championship final that he got to, look at the other championships that he won, you know who the best singles player on the Warrior table was? Maybe the best player on the Warrior table was? It was Todd Lafredo.
Yeah.
Todd Lafredo won far more championships on Warrior than Tony Spredeman did. And Warrior is the American Tour. Was the American Tour. But when you look at that, right, you look at, and the thing is, I had Todd Lafredo at number 7. The other 3 voters, let me have a look here real quick. I had him at number 11, number 17, and number 17. And the 11, I kind of get that. I kind of get that. Okay. Actually, it's 12. I get that. I understand how you could come with that. But how you can come with 17, I don't see the rationale behind that. The numbers don't suggest it. The eyeball test doesn't suggest it. The length of the career, et cetera. So for me, the one thing, and there's a couple of them on here, but the one thing, the lead story for me here is that Todd Lafredo, in my opinion, was about 6 places too low.
Wow. Okay.
I had him at 11. Jim, I'm the guy who had him at 11. And even when I had him at 11, I felt like I blew that. And I was struggling with my memory versus my emotional connection to Lafredo, because, I mean, that was the guy, right? It was Murray, Lafredo, and Spear. And I'm like, there's no way Todd can't be in the top 10. And I look at my top 10, I start second-guessing. I look at your guys' top 10s. So I blew that. If I would have Todd at least 9 or 10, if I can go back, and that's just a mistake. That's a blunder on my end. When I talk to other people, it was funny. I should have seen through this. You know, the people that didn't think Todd should be in the top 10, the people that didn't think Lafredo should be in the top 10 were people that dominated Lafredo. So of course, like Tommy Atkinson doesn't think Lafredo should be in the top 10 because Tommy kicked Lafredo's ass all the time. That's not a fair assessment of where Lafredo should land. So I think I allowed other opinions to color my judgment, and I should have had him higher than 11. And that's all I'll say about that. I think I blundered.
Tommy Atkinson owned Todd Lafredo in the 90s. Todd Lafredo owned Tommy Atkinson during the 2010s.
Interesting. Why is that?
Different player. I mean, Tommy was certainly at a different level then. Still a great player, of course. Still a top 5, top 10 player out on tour. But at that time, during the 1990s, we're talking about a top 3 or 4 player with Atkinson.
Wow. No kidding. No, it's again, this flip-flops from decade to decade. Things change. But consistently speaking, Todd Lafredo has been in the mix since the very early days and still there. And he's, what, 62?
And has won major championships on every table.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think he should have been higher, personally. That's just my take on it. Adam?
Looks into Tom. I love when Tom gets opinionated. I love that, man. Keep it up.
I think what I would like to do the next time we do this, and I think we're going to do this again in the summertime. I think we're still going to figure out what particular topic, probably lady players, right? But whatever, you know, it's a little tease there. But I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, you know, it sparks conversation and it sparks discourse and it sparks a really boatload of really bad hot takes and emotional responses and things from people out there that care about foosball and have that are fans of foosball, and the players and the people they learn from. And I'm wondering, my initial thought was, okay, well, and I talked to you all about this beforehand, like, do we not know how argument works, right? There's a status quo argument that's made by usually a consensus. And then once a status quo has been created, if you're going to disagree with that status quo, you have to come up with some reasons why and some rationales why and base it in reality. That's how it is supposed to work in a normally functioning civilization, right? Not that foosball has ever been normally functioning, but what I'm saying is you have to create that framework to have this freaking conversation because everybody's wondering why cornhole is more popular than foosball. But I freaking digress. So the other part of me that exists thinks, well, maybe there's a thing that we can do to help people and make this a little bit more interactive as we go through our decision-making process and our points-making process when we're coming up with this, is being more transparent with how we're thinking this is happening, to show people what the thought process is. We're not, you know, flinging mud against the wall until it spells out hi. We're clearly not. Jim, I am... listening to what you said about Todd, and I'm just rethinking what I would have done now, and I don't think you're wrong at all. And I am one of the most opinionated people in the world, but I can change. And what I'm saying is that what I'm I can change with information. What the hell? I can change with information, but that's the point. If you're just pulling random stats out of the ether and you're just, hey, you know, this is just what it should be because this is what I know, well, that's not only problematic for you, but let's look, dig deeper and be like, well, shoot, man, is this how you play foosball? Do you after a match you lose, do you go back in there and be like, oh, yeah, you know, I was doing pretty good, but all of my points, you know, they didn't add up as much as theirs, but I still played better. I think there's a parallel there. I feel like there is, and I feel like we could start even a little bit when we spark this kind of debate and change and accept these kind of things. Like, hey, my mind is, and we have to talk about it. That's months away. But to be a little bit more, I don't know, to find some middle ground, and we're going to talk about it, but to find some middle ground to... having this conversation, being purveyors of opinions, and frankly, let's be really honest, the dust is going to settle a couple months from now, the same way it did in the top 50, sure. Right? It is still going to take hold in people's minds. Mm-hmm. We still have to be incredibly cognizant of the fact that people are still listening to us as Foos Talk Live, Foosball Radio, Jim freaking Stevens over there, and I guess Mark... You know, Dave Gummison, of course, we have these opinions and they're being rendered and they're being out there. And at the very end, people are still going to be like, Fred is still, you know, top 50, you know, players in the United States. And yeah, that makes sense. That does pass the eyeball test. But what about everybody else? Where does everybody else land? How does that work within the grand communication of foosball in the last 50 years in its history? And I don't know. I feel like maybe it's something that we can think about going forward to be a little more transparent and a little bit more obvious in this, not just for our sake, but for everybody else's and anybody else that has been destroyed by a push kick and thought that a dink was weak when they didn't realize the dink is the most powerful shot in a push kicker's repertoire.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that I'm is Adam so Gilson. Mm-hmm. I love every time I, you know, it's like a master class with Adam. Every time I hear Professor Gilson, I feel like I've learned a lot, and not just about foosball, right?
Right.
Thank you, Adam.
I don't know. I'll just like briefly on this. I don't know. Look. You have so much debate right now going on who are the top five in the NBA. With endless statistics and endless number of pundits and experts and guys that were there, and you get a wide consensus, but you still get this hard no. It doesn't matter how transparent the metrics are. It doesn't matter what metrics you use. It doesn't matter because people get emotionally connected. And we're talking about the NB freaking A, where every stat for 70 years is documented, and they still don't agree. So it's always going to happen with us, and I think it's what drives this conference. Transparency, fine. We can do whatever we want, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. People are going to disagree, and for me, that's the enjoyable part of it. For me.
It is, and I just wish
that's a great
people
point.
Disagreed better.
Yeah, well, I mean, what are we suggesting here? And again, we're sort of teasing the potential for a top 15 women's list.
Yes.
Do we actually have five categories where we judge, you know, up to 5 or 10 in each of those categories and sort of come with a final score? You know, does that create transparency? Like Mark said, I don't think that's going to create less argument, less disagreement, less different opinions. But, you know, if you do want us to be a little more transparent, I suppose that's one way to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's what invites debate. As much as we're inviting debate for other people, I think within our group, our tribe here, you know. And I don't know. Yeah. I'm not saying that's the right way.
I can tell you.
You're right,
Jim.
Yeah,
go ahead, Adam.
It's gonna create more. Well, as much as people are going to I use the term complain very lightly, but as much as people complain about what we came up with in our top 25, they'll be like, well, why was your 30-point list so bad that you when you were using to describe, like, you know, this is your column checklist and your Excel spreadsheet, you know, it never ends.
It doesn't. You know, I can tell people that for me, my trained foosball eye, which I think is as trained as anyone's, is a big part of my decision making. As much as I like to, and I love stats. I'm a baseball fan. I'm a sports fan. I love stats, but stats are maybe 3 or 4. For me, I want winners. I want champions, like Mark, you know, talking about master players being champions. I think that's so you know, appropriate, because I want people who know how to win. You know, you can do how do you know how to win? What is that? It's so abstract, we can't even define it scientifically or mathematically, right? It is something, how do you put away a match? How do you respond under pressure? How do you close, right? And for me, you win a world championship on the American Tour, the Premier League of foosball. And it is. And I've traveled everywhere. I've seen every league, so to speak, right? The American Foosball Tour is the strongest. It is. And so winning a world championship on the American Tour, to me, it's huge. You win 2, oh my God, 3, 4, 8, like Tony Spreideman, no matter what, no matter strength of schedule, any of that. And Tony played through all those time periods. He went from, you know, basically 02 until now. And that's a pretty big spread.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't play in the 90s, but would have been successful in the 90s, of course. But winning a world championship matters. And that's why every single player on this list, barring 3, maybe, won world titles. And every world title in the history of the American Tour is represented on this list, except for one, Brandon Munoz, who will be perhaps someday on this list. But I think, you know, maybe if we explain each of us our own individual approaches to this, maybe it'll help to kind of open things up a little bit, make things a little more transparent.
Jim, I got to second you on this, and it's important, and you're going to love this. So when we were doing the Kickstarter, I got a hold of Frederick Cole, and, you know, I said, Frederick, I'm going to make a belt for you. You could have whatever you want on it. Every championship from every table, anything, World Cup, anything you want. You tell me what you want on this belt. It's your belt.
Yep.
He said, I only want one thing. I want tornado championships on this belt.
Wow.
I don't care about Garlando.
What does that tell you?
Yep.
Right. All he cared about was his tornado world championships. And he told me that was it. The only thing that mattered. The toughest ones for him to win and the one he holds most dear are his tornado world championships. That's all I have to say on that.
Yeah, that does. And that, it really speaks, and we can get into that as we start diving into the comments that we see. Mark, by the way, I want to thank you for joining us from your Uber Eats route tonight. It's pretty awesome.
Mark, if I'm not mistaken, you're somewhere between, Dubuque and Des Moines? Where are you? Nowhere.
Dude,
now.
I'm driving at high speeds on an icy road. Very funny.
Dude.
Very funny, mother lover.
So, Mark, I have to ask, you know, when you're on that route, do you actually dip into the fries once in a while and, you know, just sample the food before you deliver it?
We all do. I pull over. We all
do. I would.
You?
I sure would.
No way. Really?
I would eat everybody else's food.
God, I love that kind of inside information.
Yeah.
Oh,
talk about inside food.
Inside food. bam, ba-da-bum.
That's well done, sir. Sorry, none of you deserve that.
Well, now it's starting to degrade.
No, it's not. Let's hear some people. I want to hear what people. We've okay. said our piece. What has everybody else said?
Well, here's some things that that appeared on the Inside Foos posting on Facebook. 70 comments. We're not going to get to all of these, but a couple of choice ones. I think this one is really something worth mentioning. But Mario Origanello said that no question, all these guys are great, but not giving Frederico Collignon the number one spot is the most laughable thing I have ever seen. Americans will never give Frederico the number one spot ever. Now, wait a second. He was number one in our top 50.
So yes, that. He was.
Right. He never had the number one spot.
Unanimously, by the way. Unanimously.
Right. He never had the number one spot due to the fact that he only played in two tournaments a year in America. He revolutionized singles. He has to be the most consistent foosball player on the planet. He has to have had the highest winning percentage out of any foosball player in history. Just wondering, what statistics did you use or did you vote on and on how you came up with that list?
All right, let me give you this. Frederico Collignon, first of all, Mario, love Mario. Great, great player, no mm-hmm. doubt. Greatest player in the history of Canadian foosball, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's fair.
But Frederico Collignon played in 18 Tornado World Championships beginning in 2005. He won 7 of them. That's impressive, no yes. doubt about it. During that time period, it was number one. Is he penalized a little bit because he only played 18 years? If he had gone longer, and remember those first 3 years, he was playing basically as an expert player. In the last year, in 2007, before 1997, before he broke through in 98, he finished top 10 in all three open events. You know, fifth, seventh, ninth, whatever it was. But and certainly a great case is made to suggest that we voted Tony over him because he's American. Certainly in the case of Adam and Mark, not a chance. And Dave, well, maybe Dave. That's a little ludicrous. I think Mario, knowing particularly me and my international experience, and I guess the one thing I'll close with here, if Fred had have played, let's say he doesn't retire from the American Tour in 2012. And again, this what if game, we can play this all day. What if the TS players continue to play in the 80s? Right. You know, what if there was stronger competition for Ryan and Tony, et cetera? Although, you know, really don't underestimate the level of competition during the 2010 to 2020 era. There were several really good players still playing. Mares, Lefredo, Robertson, et cetera. There's a list of about 8 or 10. Not quite the depth of earlier decades, but still not bad. But if he had a played, if Fred had a played another 5 years, say, I'm guessing he wins a couple more world championships on Tornado. And if he does, he would be number one. However, you got to take what Tony has done. The body of work is extraordinary. No one's ever going to win more tournaments on the American Tour than Tony has. Yep. When you talk about state, regional, mass, majors, world championships, etc. And I'm not sure. I don't think anyone's ever going to win more world championships than Tony on this table. So you got to weigh him. You know, Mario, I love you. But to suggest it's an anti-European, anti-non-American thing isn't fair. And I think that all of us here, certainly who voted on this, didn't take that into consideration whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jim, you know what's fascinating about that? Because we talk about that, because I replied to him. I know Mario. He's a great guy. I've always enjoyed playing pickup games with him as he destroys me with his really smooth pull kick that he has.
Amazing player. Yep.
It's really ridiculously very good. And, you know, one of the things about that is that I get the emotional attachment to it. Again, this is something that we've been talking about. I've been talking about here this evening. But we talk about, and I'm Tom, you're going to probably bring this up, so I won't spoil it. But that's, I know that Fred made a response later in that thread, right? Yes, so exactly. Well, I'll leave that for later. Yep. But we talk about the dominance that Fred had at the tournaments he did go to. But Tony, the dominance he has been doing, not just at those tournaments that Fred would have been at, but also just everything else that he did at the state regional level, right? Even that alone is enough to put him over that top. And do you remember it was the post Hall of Fame Classic last year, but Foos Talk Live show.
Yes.
And I was just recovering from COVID, and we were just talking. And do you remember there was this? We were talking about that and this and that. And then, Tony Spraydeman tripled. And now go back to this other thing, right? And that was just like, mm-hmm. It is so, it's boring almost, right? And not right. In the negative thing. Right? It's not negative to Tony, but it's just like whatever that word is, he's just predominant, right?
And he does it every ball, Adam. Ball in right. And ball right. Out, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So
and the influence he has had on the sport, on the singles format. I mean, no one's ever played. Yeah. He took a little of this and a little of that, took what Fred had to offer him and invented the walking snake, right. The 2-5, et cetera. Took all of that and created this new style of singles. I mean, all of these things have to be factored in. Mm-hmm. And while I certainly wouldn't have had any problem, as I said, if Fred finishes one and Tony sure. finishes two, okay, that's fine. I don't disagree necessarily with that.
Yeah.
But it's yeah. interesting. Interesting, again, to reflect on all the different categories that we all factored into this.
And the more recent history when it comes to Tony's playing, and you're right, Jim, when you say that, you know, it's kind of almost expected. Like when Tiger Woods was at the top of his game, you know, you turn on the TV on a Sunday and say, well, there's Tiger. It was like 6 strokes in the lead coming down the stretch. Gee, what a surprise. Okay, back to your beer.
And that's golf, you know, the most difficult game to dominate. It really is. No one dominates golf, but Tiger did.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Tony is, in a way, in that same sort of position in his career. But the most exciting moments I can think of in the recent history were those moments when Tommy Yore Jr. beat him at Texas State. And mm-hmm. then Brandon Munoz beat him mm-hmm. at Worlds. Those were extraordinary. And of course, Ryan had his shot at Tony.
Yep.
Yeah. So those moments, they're rare, but they are exciting. No question.
You guys, I voted Fred number one, but like I said, in the, when we went through the top five, I was fine either way, just like Jim, fine either way. And what you're talking about is a hair splitting distinction between someone who won 7 world championships in a very content time frame versus top condition competition, and someone who's won 8, right? I think Tony's won 8, but he's mm-hmm. won it, and he won everything else in between because he played the tour. That's a hair splitting argument. As a matter of fact, I think the argument between those two is closer than a LeBron James Michael Jordan argument. I think the argument between Fred and Tony at number one, because we're talking about the number one singles player of all time in the world, probably forever, versus the number one singles player in the United States. It's very different, difficult to split hairs on that argument. And I was fine with Tony being number one because it's the U.S. tour. But anyway, you get to what Fred says, and go ahead. If you're going to read what Fred said or just summarize it, please get to that.
Absolutely. Fred responds by saying, you know, it's never easy to be part of a conversation when you're the subject, but I'll try. First, thanks to all who wanted me to be first. That always gives me an amazing feeling. But I have to agree with the vote and the ranking. Considering this vote is about the American tour and about singles on the American tour, it would not be fair not to put Tony on the top of the list. He won so many tournaments on the U.S. tour that he deserves the first place, and he gets my vote for being the most dominant singles player on the American tour ever. Good job, buddy.
Wow, that's great stuff. What a class act, right?
Yeah, right. So, and he does say one other thing. What if, in quotations, I had played more tournaments? I will answer, the absent are always wrong. So it doesn't come into consideration in a vote to me, but thanks to Mario for trying to.
Ooh.
The absent are always wrong.
Ooh.
That's awesome. That's really good.
Man.
That's really good.
Yeah, he is a class act.
And again, it's an honor that Fred would pipe in on this. And I think, you know, it's accurate. And I think Fred sees that. As much as we know, Fred's the greatest player to ever play the game. He's the greatest player that will ever play the game. Mm-hmm. We're never going to see anything else like Fred. There's no question about it. But when it comes to singles on the American tour, you got to go with Tony.
I'm more in agreement with that now than I think that I have been in the past, for sure.
You know, I've got one other discrepancy, if you will, on between my list and the eventual list. And that's a guy, and you know, maybe I'm a little biased in that he's a Southern California player.
Ah.
But on my list, I have Greg G. Perry at number 16.
Yeah.
On the actual list, he comes in at 22. You know, for me, if you've ever seen Greg Perry play singles, he sucks the air out of the ball. He slows it down. It's all about him. He dominates time of possession. It's that slow, take 10 seconds on the two rod to pass to the five rod, take 15 seconds on the five to pass to the three, take 15 seconds on the three to shoot a dink. All right? That's Greg Perry. He was also a really good defensive goalie. This was a guy who was a great, great singles player, a world champion on Tornado in 1988, a very difficult time to win, a national champion in 1995 with everybody there. He beat Terry Moore in the final down in New Orleans on his birthday in 1995. For me, Greg Perry changed, you know, and everybody kind of has their anti-Perry. No one was really a Perry fan. You know, it was difficult to watch him play. He was OCD to a fault. You know, it was all about him. And so there was a little bit of a distastefulness about that, perhaps, for a lot of people. But when you looked through all that, you looked at the game that he was playing, it was so high-end. It was elite singles play. I had him at 16. He came in at 22 on the list. For me, 22 was too low.
Jim, where did I have him? Do me a kindness and tell me where I put Greg, because I have a quick word about this, too. I want to know if he was on my list or he was higher. Can you see?
You had him at number 21. And neither Dave nor Adam had him on their list.
Whoa.
Yeah, because they didn't. So look, I'll speak for myself. I'll speak for Dave and Adam too. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. But let me just say this about Jeep. I'll say this about Jeep. I discriminated against Jeep because I didn't. I'm going to be honest. I'm looking back. I'm being introspective, and I need to understand my biases. And because his game was boring to me, I'm pretty sure I discriminated against him. Now, at least he was on my damn list. He should have been higher, but probably because I didn't like to watch him play and I didn't like to lose to the dude. Everybody hated losing to Jeep. I think I discriminated against him. He should have been higher on my list, too. And that's where I clearly screwed that one up, too.
Well, Mark, it's nice to catch you at confessionals as well.
Yeah.
This is always very fun.
Bless me, Father, for I've sinned.
My connection
it's actually,
horrible.
No,
I
it's.
Were, I think you were talking smack, but my connection broke out right when you were talking your smack.
That's all right. That's a good thing, Mark. That's a good thing.
Always assume I'm talking smack, Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, you know, Jim, I'm glad you brought up Jeep because he's just coming back from a timeout and I should probably get back to the match. He started in 2002.
Yeah.
What was I going to say about Jeep? The methodical nature, we talk about this. We talk about this. We have this in columns, right? When we talk about foosball, we have the players that are just talented and good, and we just know, like, you know, they're electric. Like you could, they could play in the dark and it would just, like, you know, illuminate the room. Then you have other players that, as Jim, you so eloquently described, are make the best of what it is that they have, and they're very cerebral, like Jeep, and he does that, and it's so phenomenal to see him do that. In the teens on that list, I don't know. And oh, that's what I was thinking. This is the thing that I like, because this top five thing, this has been very fascinating because this has been producing a lot of conversation for people. But when we start talking about 11 to 15 and everything below, we're starting talking about foosball in a level of nuance and a level of almost nerdy-istic thing that maybe a lot of people aren't going to be vibing with. But I think that's the point, to have these conversations, to talk about that. Because I don't, Keith, you're in there. You're all of you people actually in Twitch. How many of you have ever watched Jeep Perry play? Come on, be honest. How many? Because Jim, it's like one of those things. Like, and you're right. You can't really comprehend that. What's the analog? Who plays like that now? Maury?
No, Maury a little bit, I suppose, but not at that level. Very few people play like that. He played the percentages better than anybody, right?
Yeah, he did.
Close to it, right up there with Fred and with Tony and with these players. He was playing the percentages. He just didn't have that kind of talent. But when you take that long, when you analyze the defense, when you spend that much time in preparation, another guy who was a practice demon, you got to give that respect when it comes to the singles format. This is absolutely, in my opinion, one of the top 16 singles players in history.
I want to hear Adam. Was it just Weidman? An oversight? Was it someone you, Adam? Was it someone you didn't think about? I would ask the same thing of Dave. Was it someone who just was
Dave?
Out of
Dave
mind?
Said he forgot about Jeep. That's what he said. He said he forgot about her. Yeah,
he forgot about Jeep. Hold on, let me look at my damn thing.
You know, that's the thing, guys. Go ahead, Mark.
I always want to say I'm owning the fact that some people are too low on my list. That's just the reality. That some people are too low on my list,
So what makes us? Because I've had second thoughts as well about some things. And again, you know, we've heard this whole Pappas versus Moore sort of flip flop thing. I had Horton at number three. I had Billy at number four. They were switched around on the actual list. And there certainly is a case for Ryan to be in that top four. But what is it that has made all of us maybe look at it and say, yeah, I might tweak this a little bit here and a little bit there? Is it based on what the other opinions are, the other three people on this list? Do we hear that and go, you know, you might have something there? Obviously, that's happened tonight, right, with the Lafredo
topic. Yeah, for me, I'm looking in the mirror. For me, I got to look in the mirror and say, Jeep is 21 on my list because I thought his game was ugly and I hated losing to it. That's his honesty. Like, I thought his game was ugly and I hated losing to it. But you know what? He's a sublime player for his skill set. It's unimaginable. And I thought I was appreciating it. That's why he's on my list at 21. Open singles world champion with the weakest overall skill set, I think, of anyone on that list.
Yeah, I think that's the greatest overachiever, 100%. I think, in the history of foosball. Yeah,
100%. And that's
I had a chance to play against Jeep starting in the late 70s, right on through the 2000s. And if he showed up at a tournament in Los Angeles in Southern California, 7 out of 10 times at least, maybe 8 out of 10, he was winning that tournament. That's how good he was, how consistent he was. Another guy who plays every single ball, every ball.
Look at the type of self-determination you have to have and focus you have to have to know from the beginning that the guy in front of you is probably faster laterally and hits the ball harder than you ever have. And that person might have been playing for 9 months. Your level of determination and focus has to be at a peak because you're playing undermanned. And I think the thing I loved about Jeep in retrospect and introspection is the same thing I was pontificating on Dan Kaiser. The fastest guy and the strongest guy hardly ever wins. It's the person with the most focus that wins with a moderate skill set that can do a couple things that look the same. That person wins world championships. I put Spear as more talented than Jeep, but not by a ton. And Spear has the most feared five bar in the history of foosball, or one of them. Anyway.
Jeep also with a top 10 all time five bar, I think. Tremendous fiber. Adam, I know you have done a little research now and you are prepared and ready. So go.
Yeah. You know what I did? I had Jeep at 20 and then I changed it to Munoz.
Oh, you did.
Okay.
How many of you?
That seems a little impulsive and it seems very Brandon Munoz like, right? You're just going with a quick shot.
threw him at number 20. There was something, I don't know, there was something in the 16 and below thing that I just, my rationale there was just kind of mixing and matching. You know, I mean, this is the thing, we talk about this, right? Like, you send any one of these guys in the top five to any one of the big golden eras in the past, you think they're just going to dominate, right? Like, could you imagine Billy in the 70s with the knowledge and the ability that he has? Like,
yeah,
he's going to smash
it. You just can't do that. You can't do that. And you can't do that in baseball. You can't do it in other sports. No. But it's still fun to do.
It's
right?
fun. And the what-if game is something that's fun. And I think about that. And I think about what Munoz, you know, he's won a couple. What I think he won TKO last year, an open singles TKO, right? Mm-hmm. And then he won open singles this year against Tony, of course, who's our number one, right? So I look at that and I think, well, Is there a world where Jeep was ever going to beat Tony? That world's, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the impulsivity, throwing him in there, because I had Munoz at 20 and then Swan. And I'm thinking, by the time I got down to that point, I'm just thinking about Flash and who wears the most amount of hats at one time.
Yeah, number of hats is a big one. Here's what you did. Here, I've got two things for you real quick, Adam. Number one, Kansas City just beat Cincinnati 23-20 at the buzzer with a field goal. Number two, Adam, with that selection, you put every single American world champion on your list except Jeep.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, I don't like America.
That's me. I don't like America.
You see any bald eagles? Do you see any bald eagles behind me?
Horse with no name. Oh, God.
Oh, get over it, Tom.
Love that song. Ventura Highway. It goes,
how do you Sister not like Golden that? Hair. Sister Golden Hair?
It goes on and on. The list goes
seriously.
On.
Seriously.
Hey, hey, hey.
It's so America. Good.
You play that great song.
I gotta tell
a thousand
story
times.
About Ken Allwell. I gotta tell
Ken Allwell. All
right. I gotta tell a story about Ken Allwell because it's completely relevant in this conversation right here about dropping people in the different eras. I said, Kenny, tell me about the 70s. I need to know some basic stuff. I need to know some basic stuff. Did you guys have two passes on the five bar that looked the same? Absolutely. We had two passes on the five bar that looked the same. Did you guys have, could you guys shoot three different holes? I don't care if it was push kick, pull kick, pull shot, push shot. Could you shoot three different holes that looked exactly the same? Absolutely. We studied that. We did that. Give me an example. Just talk to me a little bit about this idea of dropping people in different eras. He said, let me give you an example. Tommy Atkinson dominated the Open Championships in Tornado 93. I watched tape on him. I prepared for him. I broke him down the way we broke down Lofredo in 77, and I crushed Tommy in open mixed at the Worlds en route to his second-place finish. He said, here's the big difference. We had to earn everything. We had to study everything, and there was 100 of us. There was no inside foos. We had to write everything down. I'm sure Todd Lofredo and Tom Spear were sketching stuff on graph paper. But we had to study. We had to break people down and study them. And that's how they, I mean, we're talking about professionals, right? And the same thing exists. You send, I don't care where you send these people. It's in between the years. You got someone who has two passes that look the same, that go in different directions and can shoot three holes. And then it comes down to decision making. You could put Tony back there and he's going to be the most mechanically sound. And he's going to have he's going to be able to do more. He's going to be like a space person. Like he's from the future, right? He goes back there. He's still got to beat these guys between the ears because they got two passes and they got three shots. You're still
wearing the Horton shirt from 2001, right? Going back in this silver shirt and these silver pants, coming back into the 70s from the future. That's
it
awesome.
It comes down to what's between your ears. And this is a real circular thing. Yeah. We get to these top five and the top 10, and these guys were finishers, man. That's the difference. And Jim, anyone has seen so many second and third place finishers. You've seen an armada, like generations of them, and the same 10% of guys win all the time. And it's because it's what is between their ears.
You know, no, so true. And Mark, I'm a 50-year sports fan, deep sports fan, very much so. And a foosball fan, of course. And for me, it is. That's the most fascinating part, right? You take the numbers, you take everything else and throw it out. Because what really matters is how do you win? Mm. What does that mean? And that's the thing that we've been looking for, searching for, and there really is no specific answer to it. There is no science to it necessarily. You can't quantify it, right? It's in the heart. It's between the ears. It's in your upbringing. It's in your parenting. It's in all of these things that all combine in this perfect storm to allow you to perform at the highest level in the most impactful situations. And when you look at it, when you look at the percentage of athletes in any sport, it comes down to less than 0.1% as to who is a closer.
Fascinating.
And let me add one more wrinkle, Jim. Sometimes that parenting is exceptional, like Frederic, and sometimes it's because the parenting is horrible, and I won't say any. But so it doesn't mean the parenting could be either way that drove you to be the best of all time. It's too many variables.
Yeah, no, that's true. Too many variables is right. Yep. Adam, you're ruminating. I can tell.
That's what cows do with their cud. It's the rumen.
Is that really? Are cows capable of ruminating?
They have
three
stomachs.
A little more depth of thought.
They have three stomachs, and one of them's the rumen.
That's utterly ridiculous.
Oh no! Jeez. It's a Sunday night. I don't have one. All right, listen. No, I don't have anything to say. This is just fascinating conversation. I like it. It's always fun to listen to Mark just go along with what everybody else is saying. It gives me a lot of joy.
Really?
Yeah.
That happens occasionally where he gets in that mood where he just does. He wants to be liked by everyone. But for most of the rest of the time, he wants to not be liked by everyone. And that's what I admire most about Mark.
That's true.
His ability to push the boundaries.
That's hilarious.
Got a couple of things for you here, guys. Listen, here are players that received votes in the top 50, but did not receive any in the top 25. Scotty Weidman, multiple world finalist, singles champion on tour. Tom Yohr, also a man who has been close in and has also won major championships. Jim Wiswell. How about that? We talk about what a great forward he was. And, you know, he had a singles win here and there and some regional stuff. But I think, you know, Wiswell's focus was on doubles with Furry. Bob Maloney, you know, a guy that we all think should be in the Hall of Fame and who we think eventually will be, a guy who finished number 40 on our top 50. Larry Chesbrough, a man that that Mark Torres thinks was probably the most talented player, or one of them, of the 1980s. Mark Crowell had some wins on the TS Tour. In singles, our friend Trevor Park, Terry Rue, Tracy McMillan. Terry Rue had a U.S. Open title, was a world finalist one time in singles. None of these players received votes, and none of them won world championships. Yet they were all very good singles players.
What about?
Is there anyone?
What about? Go ahead. What about Blake Robertson and Brandon Moreland?
Blake Robertson, Brandon Moreland. Brandon Moreland received votes on this list. Certainly another guy who had to be considered. And Blake Robertson, a guy that maybe the body of work isn't there, but certainly when Blake is rolling, I think a third place finish a couple of years ago in open singles, right? When things are rolling, when he is focused on winning and performing, Blake is amazing, right? So all of these players, great players, didn't receive votes. I think in the modern era, I think those guys probably would have been on the list of many who might vote on this if they didn't have the perspective of the 70s and 80s. But kind of interesting to think about these great players not able to crack that top 25.
Well, so listen, someone in the top 10 told me you missed out on Adrian Zamora. He has multiple singles wins, including one against Frederic. In the finals in Vegas.
I had him at number 23 on my list.
Wow,
I did put Adrian.
Wow.
I put Adrian in my top. I was the only one that put Adrian Zamora in my top. No, there were two of us. I take that back. Dave and I both put him in at number 24 on our list.
Well, think about this. Yeah, that's a miss on my part. So I have Don Swan, but not Adrian. And if you look at body of work, Adrian's probably has a better body of work than Don. But you know what? Don Swan's game is flashier. No, I don't know.
I would take Swan's body of work over him. I'm not going to compare him to Swan. Swan, I think for me, is a no-brainer up there around 20, which is where he finished. But Adrian, certainly. But who do you remove from that list? I actually here's something interesting.
Like I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. Here's what I did. Go ahead.
I had Adrian on the list, and you know who I had? I didn't have on the list.
Who?
Dave Gummison.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And multiple people had commented on that too. I mean, Dave might have gotten extra value because he's an open singles world champion. Dave himself said he probably wouldn't have put himself on. I don't think he would put himself on the list anyway. He's too humble.
No.
But that's a very interesting point. I'm wondering if I was biased toward Swan the way I was biased toward Jeep. That because Swan's game has more of a character and personality more memorable for me. My own hometown guy, Adrian, gets left off the list. I don't know.
Again, no world championship. And I think that's kind of oftentimes what the tiebreaker is. Although for me, I did put him ahead of Dave Gummison. Only because the world championship was really Dave's only big impact on the tour as far as singles. It was almost an anomaly, as we've talked about. You know, he probably came into that event probably as the 15th favorite to win the world championship. But... Adrian, certainly a great singles player.
Mm-hmm. Tom, you got any
one other thing. Some other numbers. You know, I did this last time on the top 50. I broke it down by state. In this one, Colorado had four players on the list. Texas had four. And if Brandon Moreland breaks through, you know, that maybe that makes it five. And he was right there. Brandon Moreland did receive votes, finished number 28 on the list behind Adrian Zamora and Brandon Munoz. Oklahoma had two, Tommy Atkinson, Kevin Keeter. Minnesota with two. Florida had three. As I always, no matter what, Johnny Horton's from Florida, right? No matter what, even though he lived in Minnesota for quite a long time and played out of Minnesota. And then California had two as well. So they were the only states that had multiple appearances on the list. But again, it's Colorado and Texas that have the most. And I think that's how it finished as well on the in the top 50. We have more questions. Any other comments that we need to respond to, Tom?
Well, there's something just a little off the beaten trail, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course. You're the host of this thing. This is your show, for God's sake.
This reflects on us as connoisseurs, you and I, Jim, when it comes to our segment that we love so much and everyone else loves, but except for one person, Brandon Johnson. Thank you for your comment, but he says, all I know that there is absolutely zero reason to repeat that ridiculous drink pouring sample over and over and over again during the IPA review and the podcast. Please, and this is all in caps, please, for the love of God and what's left of our sanity as foozers, limit the sample to once at the intro and move on. We can't even hear what the hell you're saying over that ridiculous sample. And yes, for the record, 9 out of 10 times, Ryan will beat Tony regardless of who prepares more.
So, now, again, Adam, I want you to comment on this. There is an opinion of someone, him beating him 9 out of 10 times. Is there any rationale behind that opinion or argument?
Well, no, I mean, has Ryan beat him 9 out of 10 times? Is it a 90% record?
Nope.
I mean, no. And Brandon, I appreciate you. Obviously, you listen, so I appreciate you listening and being in. And you know, maybe there's something to be said about having that sound drop happen at the beginning. See, and I think this is important to say this. He's not complaining about the IPA segment.
No, not at all.
Just the sound.
Just the sound.
So I think there's something to be said about that. But yes, I don't know. That was a lot to unpack right there, because we went from talking about sound drops to talking about, those are basically ostensibly fake statistics, right?
Right. Right.
All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wait. Mike Green says Charles Britt. What is Charles Britt?
Charles Britt, two-time Masters singles champion. Yeah, didn't do much beyond that, but certainly a guy that could have been in our top, 40.
Let's talk about this, because you just talked about the Masters singles, right? I don't think there's a lot of people that know about the Masters singles, and there's been like different variants of it over the decades, right? And there's the championship singles and all that stuff that happened in the early 2000s. There is no normalization of anything when it comes to foosball and the events that are actually happening. And even money doesn't even work, right? Like, you can't even really use money, because the vast majority of people that were playing foosball, even in the golden age, were still like writing checks they couldn't cash, right? I mean, so where's the thread? Like, how do you look at this over the last five decades? You can't, right?
Point well taken.
Yeah, you can. You absolutely can, and you could do it. That's what we've done, and it creates a lot of dissension. And that's where Brandon Moreland chimed in.
People are upset.
Dissension. I don't mean
not like, upset. I don't mean upset. Like, nobody's coming out with pitchforks and nobody's going to pitch a tent. Nobody's going to pitch a tent in my bed.
Brandon Moreland.
Pitchfork.
Brandon Moreland commented something about, you need two lists. One is for the modern era and one is for the 70s. And that's the way to make it equitable. And a lot of people would agree with that. But I'm like, hey,
that's not as much fun.
I love, like, Johnny Horton won open singles in ONTS. Yeah. And he won two more. That guy transcends the era. So how do you not? You could compartmentalize him, or you could find a way to pay homage to that amazing feat. And that's why he's in our top five. And so you could try your best. This goes back to, I don't know if I said this earlier, if your brain filters information and it's got to be always got to be a strict calculus. First of all, you're going to hate these lists. But second, you're going to hate me because I love the idea of like bending the rules and breaking a calculation and adding the human element into everything. My whole thing is the human element is a z-axis and an xy. The z-axis is the human element, and the human element is the thing I love the most because it has the most variance and it is it's the most abstract and subjective, and that's what I flip and love. I love the chaos of it. So,
yeah, we simplified and call it the eye test, right? I mean, that's really the human element when it comes down to it. It's what do you see, what do you feel when you watch this player play or just reflect on his overall career or whatever. And that's a big part of it. That's an important part of it. It shouldn't be the only part of it, but it should be a major, certainly, part of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I would like to highlight something for all of the people that have been listening tonight. I have been going out onto neurotic limbs trying to figure out an answer. You've heard it. We could go and clip every single one. I've done it about probably 6, 7, 8 times at this point. What are we going to do? Think about the children. Whatever. But I'm trying to highlight a point here. And I'm trying to, it was the same thing that I, when I responded to Mario and his point was I kept using rationale, words like rationale and my thought process and this to highlight the fact that there was something there to it. And the same thing here, like I am like, it sounds like I'm trying to like really have us like come down and really have something like that's concrete. But a beautiful thing about this conversation is there's no concrete as there can never be. Like I couldn't even, like we're talking about 5 decades. I couldn't even compare what I made for dinner tonight versus what I made for dinner last night, because I'm a different person than I was last night. And we were talking about back in 1974 when Mike Bowers, who maybe should be higher for some people in their opinion, but at then in 74 when he won at Elitch Gardens at the first Worlds, there was no time limits on the rods. Do you think there's a one-to-one comparison there? There isn't. So seriously, when we talk about this, when we're talking about these lists and we're talking about transparency or whatever, we're really talking about a form of artistry that really is just bringing together for people that are fans of foosball that might want to be getting better at foosball to maybe find these tapes of these players if they're available. And I asked earlier, Jim, like, you know, is there any tapes of has anybody seen Jeep play? No. People.
Yeah, there is Jeep. There is Jeep footage at InsideFoos.com.
Yeah. There is. Yeah, there is. There is. I know there is. You know, playing him, oh my goodness. And I joked earlier, but like, there is no experience better than playing a player like Jeep. You know, I try to parallel it as best I can with Maury, but like, who would you say is the...
Yeah, it's tough. He was a unicorn. He was different.
Okay, yeah. but, not that ability cerebrally, but, and this might upset some people, but I feel like if there is a spiritual successor to some degree, a Lewis Fitch type reminds me very much, maybe not in the extent of the ability, but there's still this kind of waiting for the bus to show up.
You know, so many of the players from the 70s, that's really accurate, really good. So many of the players of the 70s, and that's when the style, the American style of play was developed, would sit on that ball, right? Every rod would sit on it. That was a lot of it. They understand it's when you shoot, it's where you shoot. Mm-hmm. Those two combinations, X times X, and you know... But Jeep exemplified that better than anyone on the American Tour. I love the way you said artistry, Adam, because that is so much what it is. For me, I took the numbers, I took the world championships, I took the era, I took the table, I took it all in, put it into the mixer, and whatever came out of it, I then put feel on it, right? What do I feel about this? All of this information, this data is coming out, and now... I'm going to process it. I'm going to come with a conclusion based on how I feel about it, right? How all of this information then makes me come up with this abstract sort of artistic final answer. And that's really was what my process was on this.
Yeah. No, and I would agree. And I think I think you just actually really highlighted for me, like, why did I leave Jeep off my list? And it was a feel thing for me, from my own perspective. Like, you know, I look at the numbers, and for him, it didn't weight as high. For Munoz, it weighted as high because I can pretty much guarantee you 10 years from now. Wait, no, that's not fair. I shouldn't say that because that's the opposite of what I'm trying to say. tonight. My perception is that as influential as Spraderman has been in the last 20 years in his play, which is ultimately why I put him over Fred, I feel like whatever Munoz has been doing, and I don't know how many people have reached that level of play, but I don't know how many people could have ever reached Spraderman's level of play, yet we still have a lot of copycats that are doing well mm-hmm. at the lower levels.
Yep.
I think there's a parallel to say that the Munoz, that freestyle play that he does, can be adapted to a lot of players. And I feel like 10 years from now, and I'm thinking ahead, and that's the what if argument that I've been trying to avoid, I feel like there's a lot waiting in the wings for somebody like him. And therein lies the artistry. Like, is that fair? But no, but...
Well, so let's think this through. Let's talk about this for a second. No single one of us owns this list. Four of us voted on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all, it's okay that we all have introspection. Adam, this is like a support group moment.
No, it's not.
You're making a mistake.
No, No. This is not intervention. I am not nearly as wrong as you are for wearing that hat live. You are in portrait mode, dude. Do not start with me right now. You are ridiculous. Don't even make the hand gestures. I don't care.
Adam, no. I'm gonna ask you.
You look like you're on Stakeout. Hey, Adam, what are you, hey, Adam, Dustin Adam. Hoffman in Stakeout?
Adam, I gotta ask you a question. Did you make a mistake by not putting Jeep on your list?
Did you make a mistake not having Emilio Estevez sitting next to you in this?
Listen, I want you to imagine him hugging you right now. It's not your fault.
It would be a slow hug.
It's not, yeah. Is it Goodwill Hunting?
Okay,
it's not
dude.
Your fault.
That's great.
It's not your fault.
I love your hat. Wow. I like 1989 as much as I love your hat.
Did you make a mistake by not having Jeep on your list?
I'm glad that you got Wi-Fi. Anyways, Jim, do you have any Stakeout references? Oh, Rosie O'Donnell was in the sequel. Why do I know this?
Wow.
That's scary. That is scary.
Adam, it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Okay, Goodwill Hunting.
You know, it isn't a perfect science, right? And I guess that's kind of what we're touching on. You can take all the analytics, all the numbers, all the results, all the world championships, everything else, and really, it isn't a perfect science. There's this other abstract involved. And I think anyone out there kind of having opinions on this, and we love it. We love that you have opinions. Hopefully, you've got some facts to back it up, or some rationale at the very least. But it is. And maybe, you know, as fans of the sport, Mark, you've been around for a long time, a 1990 amateur singles world, amateur doubles world champion,
right.
As we have to get in on every show. It's like part of the contract. So Mark is, but Mark's been around. And not only that, Mark's a fan. Adam, you're a fan. You're both students of the game, and Dave Gummison as well. Dave's been around since the late 70s, and it's certainly a student of the game. So I think all of our opinions are valid. I think our experience certainly really contributes to our ability to participate in a list like this. And I would hope that would be respected, because it should be. Obviously, you all know how long I've been involved with the game at a very close level. But I'm a fan of Adam Gilson, Mark Torres, and Dave Gummison and their knowledge of the game. And I learned something from all of these guys on almost a weekly basis. Maybe not Dave, but whenever I speak with Dave, I am, for sure.
How the hell are you not the mayor of Durango or wherever the hell you are? How are you not the mayor of Durango? That was the most diplomatic, platonic, mediating thing. I respect everyone here, and I'm willing to just admit that for me personally, I made decisions on this list that were snap judgments or biased based on my feelings at the moment. Not unlike what Adam did with Brandon Munoz. We say things like we gotta focus on this, and we can't future it out. And what if Fred played, he would have won more. And all those arguments can be made. But when it came down to it, we had to look at, I think at least I try to look at specifically what was executed, and the inverse can't also be true. I mean, Adam, if you're saying you put Brandon because of his future potential to deliver, and then that's why he's so high on your list, how he's going to impact the game in 10 years.
No, it's not.
A couple of things. I love the fact that one of our hosts is actually doing the show from his car. I love that. And I also, the question I guess I have is, if we go back and we do this list in 2004, okay? We're in 2004. Are we putting Tony? Where are we putting Tony? Is he on our list? Is he at the bottom of our list? He wasn't on our list at all.
He would have already won one championship.
He had just won in 2003, just like Munoz.
Yeah. It'd be Brandon.
But he took second the year before.
True. Which maybe adds a little bit to it. But would we have had him there? I don't know. You know, I don't know if we would have.
I don't know either.
And but let me first off, sorry, Dustin Hoffman. It was Richard Dreyfuss that was the stakeout. My bad. That's the first thing that came to my mind. But also, Mark, I love the fact you're wearing the same hat that Kevin Kline wore in A Fish Called Wanda.
Same hat. Great movies.
Why don't you take your bun off and show everybody what it really looks like when you don't have your bun
off? I love that that's your well. That's such a good one to go to. But I think that what we're really talking about here, and I love it, is because you're right. Like, Munoz, like, the looking forward thing for Munoz really wasn't my thing. Like, this is where the artistry is, right? I think you could put Munoz, if we're talking about, what if we did a top 25 list that was most likely to wax everybody beneath them? I would put Munoz at 6 and put him maybe against everybody in the history of foosball as he plays.
That's a different list. Because you know what? Lefredo.
Yeah, I know it's a different list, Mark, but what I'm saying.
Hold on, I'm telling you, it happened already. We have history as a guide. Lefredo was the fastest, best lateral speed, powerful pull shot with the unstoppable hesitation wall pass, swept his way to the 77 Open Doubles Finals. Those guys that were 3 or 4 years older broke his ass down, and he won one open mixed title until the 80s. We know what happens when you put Brandon back there. These freaks that were playing this like a professional sport break his ass down and take him apart. And he's got
He has to evolve.
But Brandon
already knows what's already happened, is my point. That's all happened already. So he's going back there with that knowledge. But look, that's not the point.
I still disagree.
With what? Reality?
He already knows what happened. He has to play these guys.
Yes, he does. And that's the thing. What's cool, and Mark, you touched on this earlier about how, you know, someone said, or maybe it was Adam, we should have two different lists, right? Maybe it was you, Mark. But that's what's fun about doing it this way, right? Comparing all the different eras. We get to fantasize about Tony going back there, or about what if Doug Furry had a continued playing with his approach to the game, you know, what would he have done? That's what's so much fun about this kind of a list, is that we can go anywhere with it, right? We can compare anything. We can compare, that the 70s with the 2020s, for God's sake, and the difference in skill level now. It's like NBA players now. Everybody can hit a three. Everybody's got a quick crossover. Everybody can do these things. If you go back to the 70s, they're dominating with that. But again, those players had to be smarter, had to be tougher, would have adapted and evolved really quickly to this new freakish spaceman that has come from the future. And they would have, and because that's how they thought. That they had to think that way, right? We've talked about how strong the 70s were, how that 70s, that American style was developed, the same style we play today with obvious improvements and variations. But they would have, as Mark said, they would have adapted to him. They would have taken him and said, okay, I've seen him now for one tournament. That was amazing. That was freakish. This guy must be from 40 years in the future, but we're going to do this and this and this because we need to. This is what we do. This is who we are. This is how we make our living. This is, we need to evolve. We need to study. We need to take notes, and we're going to adjust and adapt.
And
they would have, right, Mark? They would have.
Let me tell this Allwell story better now that you can see me. Ken Allwell said, I watched all the video of Tommy Atkinson. I knew everything he was going to do in the first 3 seconds.
That was his process.
He said, how come no one else could stop him? I just gave him whatever I wanted and then blocked on three. And he shut Tommy out. Now, Tommy, I love you. You're probably listening. You're going to have your own retort on this, which is fine. But Kenny, Kenny's story is, I watched him. I don't know why no one else could stop him but me. He should have been easy to stop. Just block him in the first.
He had a 70s approach. He had a 70s approach to the game, which kind of died, with most players in the early 80s. And that's what he did.
And I'll say one last thing about this now. I absolutely want to hear you. One of these, to get argumentative, you will never get me. He'll never hear me saying that the modern football player isn't overall way more technically skilled and more sound than the 70s. I mean, they're the recipients of it. They got slingshots. They got all kinds. They can do all kinds of shit. Where there's a segue is, the modern foosball athlete is not necessarily a stronger, faster, more nutrient-rich human being than the 70s because foosball is just different. I mean, foosball, these guys were athletes back in the 70s. They were athletes. You get a lot of people that are just partying. I mean, they're drinking and they're doing all kinds of recreation. It's not like there's you have to have this strict analogy with the athleticism in basketball and foosball. I mean, Ken Hallwell, these guys were like 6-foot-plus dudes that were hulking athletes. They were good athletes. So you don't even get that. What you do get is a more mechanically skilled foozer that goes back in time. But you're not going to convince me that the mental game was any stronger now than it is back then.
Between the ears, Mark. Between the ears, as you said earlier.
Yep. I don't think it's evolved. I don't think that part of the game has evolved as much as we would have liked it to.
Circumstances haven't allowed it to. No.
Right.
It's you know what? I wanted to go one way. I wanted to talk about how the tournament soccer players that did try to make it into the 80s and the Dynamo couldn't perform on those tables, the higher finesse tables that were losing, didn't make it. And then you had the Hortons and the Bacons and whatnot come over. I wanted to get into that, but I gotta ask this. Because, Jim, you just talked about this. And I was watching it at the World Cup last year. Foosball tournaments in the United States are like party central for the most part.
Yeah.
It is not like that.
It's a sport. No, Europe. It's completely different.
And I want to know your opinion, Jim. And yet, the foosball tour for decades has been the Premier League. You got a bunch of drunk assholes out there partying till 2 and then show up wearing their sunglasses, Fern, and winning 4,000 limited. What is the discrepancy there?
I think it comes down to the table. I really do. I think it comes down to the tornado table. The ability to do more things on it, to have more control on it. I think that's what it comes down to, because you're right. I mean, for the past 15 years or so, they have been parties. They have been. And while at the top end, I mean, Tony's not out there partying, right?
Nope.
Lofredo's not out there partying. These are guys, Maris, not out there partying. These are guys who are taking it seriously as a sport. But they're the anomaly. They're the rare athletes who do that. When I would, I've covered, you know, more than 50, 60 events internationally. And every single one of those, the players treat it as a sport. At the end of the day, at 10 o'clock when that Swiss system ends, you go have a few beers and you party, you hang out, you have fun. But up until then, it is about the sport part of it, not only in the way they dress, but in the approach to the game as well.
So you have the Europeans come over and play in the United States, and they're never going to win because either they're playing people that are good, that are better than them, drunk on a more difficult table to play on, or just a bunch of like sober overachievers. I'm not joking. Yes. Like I'm just
No, that's accurate. But there have been players. Thomas Haas came over, treated it as a sport. Yep. His first appearance on the major American tour, he finishes fourth in open singles. There are cases like that where they come over, but unfortunately, the exposure to the tornado table. They have tornado tables in Germany and other parts of Europe, but until you're able to come out and play on the tour again, you know this, Mark. Fred would have never have been Fred if he had not come over and played on the Tornado Tour. He would never have been Fred. He would have been this European player maybe who wins most of the tournaments he plays over there. But he would certainly have not have ever been considered as the greatest player in the history of the sport. That came as a result, obviously, with Lofredo, but really coming over and playing Premier League foosball against the best, smartest players in the world on the best table in the world.
And that's a money sacrifice. And a compromise that you have to be there for the gratification of winning a championship. You're not there for the money. After your plane ticket and your hotel, you're in the red.
No.
And so you gotta have the money to burn to come out here. And Federico was fortunate to have all that, including the championship spirit, to win under any circumstances.
And it didn't hurt that he would take 10 or 15,000 home every year. Yeah. From the worlds as well.
Not bad.
So let's reverse engineer this question. Reese Roberts is now asking this, and I'm going to preface what he's asking. So the United States is the Premier League, yes. But as Reese says, why have U.S. men players only won one ITSF World Singles Championship? Yep. Jim?
It's a great, great question. And I have to think it has to do with what we're talking about. It has to do with approach. You know, obviously tables factor in, but when you look at Tony, when you look at some of these other great American players who now have a great deal of experience competing on other tables, you would think it would have happened more than just the one time with Ryan Moore back in 2010. That's a great question by Reese. It may have to do with approach to the sport, like we've talked about. So accustomed to playing in this party environment, going over into this international sport environment where you have to get your sleep, you have to eat well, you have to prepare for every match, you have to scout your opponent, you have to win your qualification matches in order to get a high seeding, which oftentimes the Americans don't do. They don't approach the qualification rounds as being important because they're not accustomed to this. Mm-hmm. But you must treat those qualification matches as being important in order to get that first, second, third seed, right? And they don't. They don't. They will take the foot off the pedal. They'll go and they'll do this. Why am I doing this? Without understanding completely the importance of it.
Even worse, Jim. Even worse. I've heard more than one American player tell me which World Cup they prefer to go to because of the bar scene and the party atmosphere. And they rate the World Cup tournaments based on where the best drinking and partying is going to be. So there's even a lower dimension than just how they approach it. It's like their interest in going into ways on where they can party the hardest.
Again, we have been preconditioned in this country based on, you know, whenever a tournament, it's advertised by the amount of money. And in Europe, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing, too, when Tony was on this show, I asked him this question. You know, the one thing he is missing is that world multi-table singles championship. And I asked him, I said, Tony, do you feel a vacuum? Do you feel a void in that you have never won that particular title? And he said, no, I don't. Yeah. You know, the Tornado World Championship is the one that matters to me. It isn't that multi-table world championship. And when you hear that, you've got to go, In my opinion, as someone who has covered this event on eight of the 11 I've covered, to me, it's the biggest title. To me, this is the one. As much as I respect the Premier League, the Tornado Tour, this is the one, man. You win this championship, and you look at the players who have won, and these are the best multi-table players in the world. To me, being the best multi-table player in the world means you're the best player in the world.
Did he say why? Did he say why he didn't? Like, it just wasn't his bag or what? Like,
it just didn't mean as much. Maybe because of the money, maybe because, I don't know. I don't know whether it was some sort of defense mechanism because he hadn't. But whatever it was, it didn't mean as much to him. And you know, with Tony Spreadman in particular, he's always finding things, right, to motivate himself. Little things during the course of a game or a match or a ball. And in this case, that apparently, that multi-table world championship doesn't motivate him.
Huh.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I could see it. Well, I could see it.
I love Reese Roberts, though, man. The dude knows the game. He sits over there at 4 in the morning.
That's 4 in the morning, right?
Watching our... later than that, even, I think.
I'll turn this back around. How many people have won that event besides Fred, who won it, five times? How many people have won it, how many people have won it more than once, and what countries have won it? I'm guessing... Did Yannick win it twice?
I believe Yannick won it once. The only other player to win it twice, I believe, is Kevin Hunsdorfer of Austria. I believe he's won it twice. Sven Bonsield has won it. There's been a few others. But really, Fred dominated it early. Ryan got his win, beating Fred in the finals. Tony's been in the finals before. Ryan's been in the finals another time. Robert Atha got to the final. It was the favorite in the final in Murcia.
So my point about that is that...
No, Tony was in the final, against Robert, but it was in Spain in 2019 when he lost to Twan Hermans of Netherlands.
Here's my point about this particular event, Reese. I think the only player capable of dominating it is Fred. And after that, you're going to get a potpourri of different people playing hot, playing out of their minds that weekend. Like Ruben Heinreich won it the last time. He just was incredible. And so I don't think that event, the only person that's going to dominate that event, I think, is Fred or some new incarnation of Fred that we will never see. So the fact that the Americans got one is not as unsurprising as it seems when Yannick may have gotten one and Kevin's got two. And Kevin's a superstar, man. That guy's a stud. So I don't know. I don't think that tournament can be dominated.
Yeah, I agree. Not anymore. It's Fred. Fred is the only guy to ever dominate, you know, multi-table. No doubt about it. But you would think at some point, if Tony continues to go, that he's going to get one more.
Well, this comes back to the question. And I've always wondered about this just as a casual fan. But why have we never played an actual ITSF World Cup on this side of the pond?
It comes down to money.
You got to ship 60 tables from four other countries.
So
you got to ship the tables over.
It's even more than that. The national operation has to basically come up with $200,000 or $300,000 from sponsors or whoever in order to even begin to get in the mix to run something like this. And like Mark says, the cost, you know, when we have them in Europe, they've got to fly the Americans in from Europe or from America to Europe. They've got to fly in a few of the Asian tournament players, you know, because the top 16 men get in, get their trip paid for. Top 8 women get their trips paid for. So the ITSF, in order to bring in all those Americans, where they give them about 900 euros to cover their expenses, that's a lot of it as well, as Mark says.
And then you ship you only ship 30 tornadoes over there, as opposed to shipping whatever. 60 Garlando, 60 Bonzini, 60 Leonhardt. You got to ship all those too.
Okay.
That ends up being a variable.
Well, doesn't it seem like...
We have had the Intercontinental Cup has been here 2 times in Las Vegas in 2016 and 2018. And they did ship over a few tables, but not near what they would need for a World Cup event.
Okay. No, it just seems like in the Olympics, I mean, you've got a different host country every time. And... why can't we follow a similar model?
If the American Federation could go out, get sponsors, could generate that kind of capital necessary to run this kind of event, it could be done. Mm. But unfortunately, the American Federation has never been very strong.
Right. Got it.
Who is the American Federation? Who's the governing body?
USTSF at this point, right?
Oh. Mm. Got it.
Yeah. Got it. And at some point, maybe we have Donald Wilson on again when he's more prepared to answer some questions about that as well.
Sure. Well, there's so much more to just this list. I just want to say, and I want to echo your words, Jim, but from my perspective here, I can't imagine going into a court of law with a better team of witnesses to this game called foosball. So, Adam, Mark, Jim, Dave, I mean, you've all got different perspectives, and it really makes a full 3D picture of what this list is really what it came out to be. I mean, maybe you might find one or two other people on the planet who might have more insight into the game, but I don't know who that person might be.
Well, people want to join.
Neither do I.
Tommy Atkinson wants to be in here, and Kenny Alwa wants to be in here, and Ken Alwa wants to bring some friends with him from the '70s. And I'll be mum on the names for now. But if we get that show,
that'd be awesome.
That show, we'll get a whole other perspective. Not to say that perspective is going to be improved. It's just going to be different, and it's going to be very, very edifying. What that perspective is like, it'll be edifying. It'll add color and context in ways that we can't, because in many ways we weren't there where some of these other gentlemen were. So we'll just have more. More color.
Well, maybe for future lists, we could gather 6 people to make the vote, but I'm not sure if that would make any difference.
Well, I know I love what Mark is saying. It'd be great, and I know we're teasing it a little bit, but to get some of those players, and we've had a few, and Adam, I know you have something on your mind. You're ready to speak, and I'm going to get here in a minute. But those guys were there, right? Maybe they don't have the dates right. Maybe they don't have the wins right. But the impressions we've gotten from those players who have competed back then were fascinating. And there's no way we can duplicate. You know, we do our best to. I was there a little bit, still just a wide-eyed young kid wandering around there, not really knowing what I was seeing. For the most part, but to hear those voices, and I know who you're referring to, Mark, and it's be fascinating to have those, would be pretty awesome. Adam, you are bursting at the gills here to get something out. I can see it.
No, I'm not. I just there's so much to take in, because what we're really doing tonight is we're talking about how we talk about foosball, and when we're talking about how we understand ourselves within the scope of foosball. Not just you and I, you know, not just us, because, you know, we do what we do here with Foostalk Live and whatever, but the people that are listening have to listen to this and set their compass north towards what it is that we're saying as far as how they go and they play. And I just wonder, how many times could you go up to one of these players at any one of these tournaments, and I'm just going to do this, and not to be rude, but to be like, have you considered why you're losing? Is it because you suck? You know? And is it not fair to ask that? You suck. Quit sucking. Right?
And what is going on? Okay, I'm listening.
Yeah, just finish your delivery, Mark. Don't interrupt.
No.
But what I'm saying is that, like, I was very pissed off tonight during this conversation because I don't like being challenged. But at the same time, I have to accept that. And I have to listen to what we're talking about and grow and move on from it. As much as I know that the both of you two do when I talk, maybe not Gummison. I don't know. He's not here to defend himself. So screw him. But what I'm saying is like, I'm always looking for parallels, right, Jim? Right, Mark? Like, you know me. Like, I love foosball. I love the people. Like, I'm not here for these kind of things. Like, these top 25 lists, they bring conversation. But to me, they are important to bring this conversation, because if we cannot, as you said so eloquently a year ago, Mark, if you cannot see the mirror in which your opinion shines in your own face, then ask yourself, why do I think what I think? Well, maybe your hesitation wall pass sucks, and maybe you should just get a little bit better at foosball or practice a little bit more. And I know I'm casting a wide net, and I'm sorry, because these are the things that I think about. And this is how I've been thinking about the entire night that we've been talking. Because what we're really talking about when we talk about this kind of list is our flaws in thinking and our flaws and right? And if we cannot apply that to the things that we do and that we think, and maybe it's not okay to put cilantro on your tacos, and maybe it's not okay to eat well-done steak with ketchup or what have you, or maybe you should ask yourself that if you keep thinking that you're sandbagging and staying at the rookie level, but it's just because you can't win, well, maybe you should rethink your game and watch it, right? So, I don't know. Like, it's never just one thing. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to wrap up here. It's never just one thing with me. It's never just this top 25. It's never the Lofredo. It's never this. It's never your weird Kevin Klein homage hat, Mark. It's all of us collectively need to stop sucking. Getting better and being a little bit more self-introspective and accepting it. Mark.
Listen, man. There's a lot of meta shit going on here. And I'm not kidding when I said it's not your fault. I don't know what the hell we've tapped into. It's some PTSD childhood shit, but I love it. Yeah. Let's go with it. But let me show you how I like to pride myself on a lot of ways to becoming ego unattached to certain things. And this list is a prime example. For example, let me give you an example. We start this off with, I screwed up, Lofredo was too low. And then we go to, how the hell, I discriminated against Jeep because I don't like the way his game looks. As a matter of fact, they elevated Swan over Adrian because I like the way his game looked. This is me making attempts to look in the mirror and say, how did I fail in this list? And I am okay with that. I failed all over this list, but guess what? We failed as a foursome because we made mistakes. I mean, I don't know if everyone stay. If you stand by every, Dave Gummison outright says, I forgot about Jeep. You want to know why? Because Jeep is flipping forgettable. You want to forget about Jeep. You don't want to, like, Terry Moore told me he quit playing foosball because he lost a Jeep. He said, I lost a Jeep, and that was it. I was done playing foosball. That's how, and so Jeep got discriminated against because his game isn't pretty. And I think the same, if you look in the mirror, and I'm not saying this is true or not, Brandon's game might have been elevated because you're intrigued with his game. And you know, a lot of people do that with Ryan Moore. They say, where, look, because Ryan, oh my gosh, no one's ever going to hit the ball like Ryan. So Ryan moves up. And this is all this is the human element. And
human element, buddy. That's right.
All it is. It's a human condition, and it's human. And we're manifesting it, and we're not perfect. We're absolutely imperfect. And if you can't ingratiate yourself into your imperfections, that's a failure in itself. And it's funny. It was the last thing I'll say. The top 50 list, I challenged a bunch of people. They made them very uncomfortable. As a matter of fact, one master was so uncomfortable, he had to call me out. He didn't want Cindy Head in our top 50 list because he felt like it should only be men. And there was more than one person who felt that. And I said, you don't know our criteria. Mm-hmm. If you don't know our criteria, okay, without our criteria, how could you make that assessment? And if you don't want women on this list, because you don't even know the criteria, you got to look in the mirror and ask yourself, why? Yeah. Why don't you want women? And that's a deep thing. It gets really, really deep when you got to look at your biases and look at your upbringing and say, why the hell do I think the way I think? Why do I think the way I think? Anyway, kid show, I'm getting passionate about this. I love people being forced to look in the mirror and understand themselves differently. And that's what these lists do more than anything. They force you to look at yourself, and that should make you a better competitor. And that's that's the end of my rant.
I love that. And, you know, as experienced as we are in the sport, as, you know, as bright as we may be and as knowledgeable as we may be about the history of the sport and the analytics and everything else, it all comes down to the human element. It really does.
Yep.
And that's why it's always better with situations like this. That's why I felt like a minimum of 4 voters was important. And you could actually get as high as 10 or 20 potentially on something like this, because the human element means that we're all going to look at it so differently. We're going to look through it through a lens of emotion almost as much as anything, as much as, like I talked about earlier, throw all that stuff into the mixer. And what comes out of it is still going to be painted by emotion and in context, you know, for each of us individually. And it is something that we do. This is an exercise in self-examination, as Mark said, especially, you know, with someone who says that women should not be in a list. You know, I know amateurs and semi-pros who could beat Cindy Head. I'm not sure that's true, but that isn't really what it's about. That wasn't the criteria, but it is the human element, and we are certainly flawed as humans, except for you, Mark.
Well, there's that.
I'm the most broken person. I promise you, I'm the most broken person of this foursome right here.
You're driving through Iowa. We understand that, buddy. You're driving through Iowa at, what is it, at 10 p.m. on a Sunday night, and you're driving through snowy, cold Iowa.
I could be in an operating room. So I could be in an operating room at 6 a.m. and not have to start driving at 3 a.m.
Details. It's Iowa.
Well, listen, I want to say one last thing, and it's very relevant. I just came off of a 5-day work meeting. And in that work meeting, we had something called War Games. And War Games is an exercise where you have to study the competitive profiles of your competitors. And then you you basically battle with your competitor's profile of surgical equipment. It's a whole thing. Okay. So we had to do weeks of studying and create presentations. And then we battled it out. And I'm proud to admit that my team won the War Games. But here's what's important about this. It's an empathy exercise. Because when you have to stand in the feet of your competitors and say things about your and other people's product lines, it forces you to embody someone else's perspective. And all it does is elicits growth and self-actualization in ways that you're not capable of unless you do this empathy exercise. And I think when we go to two, I said one last thing earlier about it should make you a better competitor looking in the mirror and having that level of introspection. The other piece of that is the empathy piece, where we stand in each other's shoes and we understand the why. You got to stand in Fred's shoes and Mario's shoes, and you got to be that person for a moment as much as you can, because there's an existential limitation on how much you can do that. But you do as much as you can, and you learn more about yourself. And people are afraid to do that. And I'll say that because it matters competitively. When you could, like, Tony has to step inside your body and in your mind. So he could break your ass down. He anticipates what you're going to do because he's figured it out. It's an empathy exercise at the master level, getting in your opponent's head and playing at the high level, and it just makes you better. And I think people that are listening to this and hearing all the meta messaging that's going on about these lists and yourself and the mirror, make it an empathy exercise. Don't make it an exercise in narcissism. Don't make it an exercise in egomania. Try to figure out why people really think the way they think. And then have sensitivity to that and compassion, and then make you a better competitor. And
wow, that's great. You know, real quick, I just want to thank my empathy exercise tonight, because we've already said everything more than twice, I think. But Tom, my empathy exercise for you is that you've been drinking what I would imagine is what cotton candy pee tastes like all night with that. And I appreciate you doing that. And I think you're a gif. I don't think you're actually drinking more. I think you just keep taking little micro sips.
It's still the same beer. And
right, it's still in the same cup.
Same, it still tastes amazing.
Mm-hmm. You sure you don't want to have some more?
Of course.
No.
Some more.
And on that note.
Hey, by the way, it's USTSO, not USTSF. Thank you, Keith Glenn. Federations come and go. And for me, as you guys know, if you've seen the interview with Donald Wilson, I don't think the USTSO is doing enough. I think they should be doing more, including possibly bringing the World Cup to the U.S.
There you go. Voila. Guys, this is amazing. And if hopefully if Adam recovers fully by next week, we'll be back together again. What do you say?
That sounds good.
Yeah. So, always fun.
Let's see if we can top this one. So parting shots for the evening. Jim, you may begin.
You know, I guess for me, you know, it's been several months. I haven't worked a tournament since early November at the Colorado State Championships. And right now the next one on the horizon would be, I think, Las Vegas, the Hall of Fame Classic would be the next one with others to come, Texas State. Maybe who knows what else. But I'm kind of looking forward to hanging out with the Inside Foos crew and covering some foosball. It's something I did for so long, for so many times a year, and it certainly has been cut back a little bit. But I look forward to hanging out with Adam and hopefully with Mark somewhere and hopefully maybe with you, Tom.
I'm planning on it. Yeah. For the Hall of Fame? Yeah, absolutely. It's a bucket list thing. Adam, parting shots.
Here's my parting shot. And I love what we do and I love all this. And you've already heard everything I've said. But I want, I feel like this is targeted at a majority or medium majority group of foosball players. I want to know, and maybe they don't care, but like, how do we get younger people involved? How do we get them interested? Mm. Like, what do we do? Like, how do we change that? Like, I don't know.
Well,
that's just what's on my mind.
This list in five, this list we just talked about in 5 years.
No, you know what it does. You know what it does for me, and I know I'm interjecting here, but you know what it does for me. It makes me miss John O'Brien.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
absolutely. Well, Mark, parting shots.
I want to give a shout out to Keith Glenn. Keith Glenn, thank you so much. He's uploaded the 2000. We want to archive digitally where it's always going to be available, the Inside Foos archive. And Keith has gone through the painstaking work of recently uploading the 2002 Tornado World Championships. It's on InsideFoos.com now. And Keith is going to be doing tons of work getting an event uploaded. So go to InsideFoos.com to see the 2002 World Championships. Jim, you got something to say about that event?
Yeah, it's a Fred Triple. 2002 was a Fred Triple.
Boom. Wow.
Boom. We keep talking about this guy, Frederick. If you haven't seen him play, or it's been a while since you've seen him play, you'll see foosball evolve to a fifth dimension that we don't think anyone else will get to. You can see the 2002 World Championships, Frederico, one of his... Did he triple five times or three times? How many times?
Five times. Yep.
He tripled five times.
What was the next after that? Two?
2004.
No, I mean, who? How many other triples have there been?
Like, that Steve Murray in 87, and then Fred five times, and then Ryan Moore.
Wow.
That's it. Not bad.
Fred tripled five times.
Five times. Is that ridiculous?
Wow.
See the 2000. Yeah. And he probably won nine events that week.
We will never, ever. Yes, he won nine events.
He won nine events.
We will never see anything again like Frederick Colin Young.
Yeah. Anyway, 2002 World Championships, InsideFoos.com. Thanks, Keith Glenn. And there'll be more coming up, and I'll promote that everywhere. Anyway,
that was a good one, too, guys. Oh, watch it. It's a good one.
Great stuff. Real quick. I bet you if Fred played more on the tour, he wouldn't have won as much because people would have figured him out. Anyways, go ahead.
Percentage wise or anyway, that's an argument for another day for sure.
It's a good one. I don't know. I have to think about it.
Think about it.
Cool. Yeah,
put your other thinking cap on.
Wouldn't have won as much.
There's so much material.
Hey, man bun. It didn't slow him down on any other table. I don't, if history is a guide. History's a guide, he would have won more.
Yeah, well, if history's a guide, then we can look at the Dynamo Tour. So, anyways, go ahead.
Yeah.
There's so much material out there. I mean, so much history that's waiting for us to see. And of course, that's to our benefit. Thank you, Jim, for that. So a quick mention about the future here. House of Tournaments presents the Moneyball Northwest Foosball Tournament. It's coming up on February 16th through the 19th at the Hyatt Regency in Portland, Oregon. Reason I say this is a House of Tournaments event. This is going to be unprecedented. Right, Adam?
Yes.
Yes.
It's going to, oh, shoot. Oh, yes. No, not only is it going to be unprecedented because they're doing a lot of different things with their streaming process and how they present the way that it looks, which is going to be fantastic. I get to go up there and visit my folks, which, of course, I'm a self-adopted Pacific Northwest.
I love that. I love going. I miss it. I miss going up there, man. I love the Pacific Northwest. Love it.
Wow. Yeah. And they do have the breweries and everything, but
In the history,
right? Yeah, I'm going to bring up what I'm going to say later. I'll do it next. Later.
Kudos to David. You know, I think it's going to be a great time. Looking forward to that and watching the entire weekend. Well, so in the meantime, we're back together again for episode number 145 next week, and hopefully we'll have some extra guests on next week. We'll see. But anyway, Foos Talk Live, this is episode number 144, and yeah, it's been the kibitz, or the giblets, if you will, of the top 25 male singles players in the U.S. Tour. Wow, amazing. Right, well, let's get back together again very soon on Foos Talk Live.
Foosball tournaments are everywhere. Foos Talk Live proudly presents a weekly update of events near you with the Foos Talk Live Tournament Beat. Time to make your plans with the 2023 Kentucky State Tour kickoff February 1st through the 5th at the Clarion Hotel in Lexington, Kentucky. It's the next 518 Foosball Smashdown Saturday, February 11th at Trick Shots Billiards and Wicked Eatery, Route 9, Clifton Park, New York. The Moneyball Northwest Foosball Tournament happening February 16th through the 19th at the Hyatt Regency in Portland, Oregon. Don't miss the $5,000 DFW Championships of Foosball February 17th through the 19th. Carrollton Chop Shop Sports Garage, Carrollton, Texas. Here comes the $12,000 Georgia State Championships. February 23rd through the 26th at Embassy Suites in Atlanta, Georgia. The Wisconsin State Championships are being held March 16th through the 19th at Mad Apple Billiards, Appleton, Wisconsin. Don't miss the $10,000 Illinois State 10th Annual Foosball Championship. Poplar Creek Bowl, Higgins Road, Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Mark your calendar for the 2023 Hall of Fame Classic at the Golden Nugget in Las Vegas, Nevada, April 12th through the 16th. The Masters Open Championship, April 27th through the 30th at Holiday Inn, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, Florida. And who could forget the Tornado Championships, August 30th through the 4th at the Clarion Hotel, Lexington, Kentucky. Each week, we do our best to give you the most up-to-date listing of foosball tournaments near you. If you have an event you would like to add, send us all the details at info@foosballradio.com. Tune in every week for the Foos Talk Live Foosball Tournament Beat. Foos Talk Live is a product of Foosball Radio. With gratitude, we recognize our Foosball Radio Patreons. Our Foos Talk Live sponsor, original-leonhardt-usa.com. And thanks to InsideFoos.com for use of their audio during the show. Tune in again next week for another episode of Foos Talk Live.
In the meantime,
we'll see you foosin'.